Trap One Podcast. This week we're talking about the last day, an epic big finish story, or the first half of an epic big finish story anyway, which takes the Seventh Doctor all the way up to his fateful emergency temporal orbit in 1999. Joining me are Dan and Keith. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
So it's quite nice to know that you're going into the first half of a big two-part epic. I'm looking at you across the Spider-Verse. Grr. with this one, so we've got the first six episodes of a 12 episode. This is probably the most epic big finish thing I think that I've listened to. So what are your initial thoughts, Dan?
Yes, it's, well, judging on the first half of it only, it's definitely going to be a big epic one compared to things they've done before. But I mean, obviously, there've been a lot of box sets that are about 16 episodes long, but they're more various stories that are linked together, but this seems to be one biggie full of epic.
Yeah, so Doom Coalition and everything, it's like you say, it's four stories of four parts usually, and the Dark Eyes and that kind of thing. What do you think?
I think I had to go through my back catalogue and remember who most of the people were. It was, I messaged you the first time saying I'm a bit baffled by this, so the second time it made a lot more sense, but yeah, they're definitely going for epic. I think they were saying they want to try and do for Sylvester what they did for Colin Baker previously with the final adventure, or the last adventure, wasn't it? So they obviously didn't think that him just stepping out of a police box and being shot down was probably not the best way to write out the most Machiavellian of Doctors. So I'm quite glad they're doing this. Yeah, but I did have to go back. If you put into the Big Finish website, the names of different characters, and they'll tell you which stories they feature, and that's quite useful. So I did that this morning.
Ah, that is useful, yeah. Because to be honest, of all the ranges, the Seventh Doctor one is probably the one I'm least familiar with. I've heard some of them.
And he's your favourite, you fig fan.
He is, and I don't know why, but I've listened to more Fifth, Eighth, and Sixth Doctor stuff, weirdly. I don't know, he's kind of worked out like that. But a lot of the Hex stuff I haven't listened to, so... But I've still got that to look.
That's because you're young. you didn't pick up the stories in the old days, no.
Yeah, when it was back in the old days of one a month, it was easier to keep track of it then.
Yeah.
You certainly listen to them a lot more in those days. Yeah, because these days, I tend to have one listen and that's it. In those days, I used to play them to death. So it was like, I could probably quote the original stories off by heart these days. And look, if we're doing them for like a podcast or something, I will listen to them a second time. It's very rare I listen to a story a second time these days because there's just so much of it.
I was saying, I love that there's so much stuff, but yeah, it can get a bit overwhelming. You feel like you want to be listening to everything, but it's just not possible.
I've listened to this three times, which is obviously quite time-consuming, but I did it while I was doing other things like walking the dogs and that kind of thing. And I think the great thing about this set, one of the great things about this set is it's such good value for money because I've listened to it three times, and each time I have found new things in it because it's so big and vast and sprawling, and there's so much going on that each time I kind of think, I don't remember listening to that. I don't remember hearing that bit the first time that I heard it. So
that's true. I did have questions. First time I listened to it, I thought, well, surely that's... And then I've listened to it a second time and I thought, oh, actually, they did say that. There's little lines that said they did sort of explain what's happened and I just missed it the first time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I had to make myself a few little notes just to go back to. One of those I couldn't work out the answer to still, but the rest of it, yeah, it definitely needs your attention. You get a lot of value out of it.
And to be fair, we only are halfway through it, aren't we? So we're talking from... Yeah. We're going to make predictions that are going to be completely wrong, I suspect, yeah.
Hello, Greyhound. This is Trap One. Do you read me? Over.
So as you say, Keith, the Seventh Doctor's exit on TV for the most... Machiavellian and forward planning of Doctors is being abruptly shot down.
He didn't look at the telly.
he didn't check the scanner first. This very much goes in completely the opposite direction, doesn't it? This is the most extreme example of the Doctor's planning and, you know, the chess play on 1,000 cosmic chessboards and all that kind of thing. He has... not just eradicated the Daleks and the Cybermen as he did in season 25. He has taken over Gallifrey and he's using beings from another universe to make our universe perfect in his eyes. As I as I've understood it, he's eliminated the Daleks, the Cybermen, and the Crotons.
Not the Crotons. What about the Quarks?
With the Quarks' fate is as yet undetermined.
That'll be in the next box set, I'm sure.
He's kept the Sontarans around for muscle.
For security.
Yeah.
For some reason. They like being told what to do, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. They're biddable, I think, is the word that he says, doesn't he?
He has a zoo of all the species he's eradicated, so he's not quite committing genocide every time.
Two of them.
Yeah. But since he's only like one of the race, presumably they're all doomed.
So this all sounds like just kind of impossibly huge in scope, I think, doesn't it? But the way that it's presented, the first two episodes are sort of paired.
Dr. Light episodes, yes.
They're the Dr. Light. We have a little introduction from the Seventh Doctor, and those bits really echo some of his famous TV scenes, don't they? So the one initially he's talking is in a coffee shop or something. He's talking about coffee, and that's a bit like the tea shop scene in Remembrance of the Daleks. And then in the beginning of the second episode, he's talking about things that he loathes, and that reminded me of, you know, him hating bus stations and, you know...
Oh, you're clever. I completely missed that. No, that went straight over my head, sorry.
I missed that reference, actually, but I did get the reference about someone is redecorating the universe.
Yes.
But no one has said they don't like it yet. I think we're just looking for references as well, but, you know, they could all be.
Yeah, I felt like it was a bit of a celebration of his era by echoing those some of his
famous... It says in the extras at the end that they thought the biggest villain that he could fight would be the Seventh Doctor himself, isn't it? So they've made him the villain of the piece, in effect.
Yeah, and it's odd, isn't it? Because we've got two aces as well, which...
Yeah.
We've got...
Dee and Dorothy.
Yeah. There's an ace who's working with the Doctor who's president of Gallifrey, and she's president of Earth.
Yeah, I've called her President Ace in my notes, just because that's how I could keep track of it, basically.
I've got Nasty Ace.
But I think the quite clever thing is that you've got the Doctor and Ace, because of the Doctor and Ace, you instinctively kind of are on their side, and they sound quite reasonable a lot of the time. Hmm. So when President Ace is giving Hex some of his memories back, and you know you're quite kind of odd. She is doing something here, like we know that it's Ace, and she can't be bad, and she can't be a bad president, and she seems quite nice with Hex's daughter. But then it all gets turned on its head when he says to Hex's daughter, "Well, which one of your parents should be executed?
Which do you like best?"
Yeah, and then you think, "Oh no, she is bad," but I think instinctively because she's a companion they've been watching for all these years. That you kind of think, oh well, you know, she can't be bad. And same with the Doctor, but they are. But then you've got Rebel Ace, who is trying to bring down the evil Doctor and the evil Ace.
You've also got Nice Ace, who's working with villains and rescuing the Masters, so she's not being terribly good either, is she? Sir?
Yeah. So
maybe she is the baddies, and really, the other Ace and the Doctor are really working against her.
It is very morally gray.
Twist at the end.
It is, yeah. And I think one of the things that the Doctor says very early in this story is that he loathes his simplicity of thinking, and I feel like there's two things there, because one of them is this story is very complex and morally grey, and you're never quite sure what's going on, but also that thing of simplicity of thinking that, you know, makes people susceptible to populism and...
Yeah, and that's a good
easy
point.
Easy answers to complex things, where and you've got President Ace who stepped in and basically is a dictator of the Earth. And
Sally Morgan, who voted for her, now regrets it.
Yeah, it's difficult to know where to start with this a little bit, but maybe we should start as the story does with Rebel Ace and her kind of dirty dozen or dirty half dozen that she's recruiting.
The dirty half doesn't
Yeah, my main impression of, like we were saying, about this part of it and the whole bigger picture is it's very much comic book in many ways, really, which is kind of the whole point of the Andrew Cartmell era when he was trying to be inspired by 2000 AD. Because ever since like the 80s, there was always a lot of people coming in and doing, why are these super beings not just sorting out the planet kind of thing? It's very much Doctor Who does that. They're sort of trying to do a bit of that with this. With the Doctor basically fixing everything, which of course is going to go wrong, like it always would. But yeah, it's definitely that. And then the whole Dirty Dozen, Dark Avengers. What's the DC one? Suicide Squad. It's all that kind of vibe, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Villains teaming up.
First two episodes are, in effect, the gathering of them all together, isn't it?
Yeah.
And to my mind, that's the best bit. I'm really enjoying that bit. When we got to like 5 and 6 and it just sort of became on Earth and stuff, my attention was beginning to wander a bit the second time, I have to say.
There's a lot more sparky funness in the beginning of them all just having to work together, definitely.
And times obviously change because it's implied that Kane is back and he says, I worked for you. So it's obviously after Dragonfire, but obviously something's changed to bring him back from like not to being dead anymore. So, and I can't remember if other characters they brought back were killed off. I can't remember if Mother died or
what they've said. They said there's timeline fluidity, which is a handy phrase for we can just do whatever. But again, like you said earlier on, it's very much multiversey stuff. So Kane was dead. I don't think anyone, I mean, I'm checking my list of characters I had to write myself a fact sheet. He is the only one that I'm aware of being dead. Everybody else was alive when they were last in it, but they've all got different lives.
Yeah, so I do like the way they're all drawn from different aspects of the Seventh Doctor. So you've got a TV character in Kane, and he's never been in Big Finish before, as I understand it. It's the first time.
Due to being dead, yes.
Yeah.
And then you've got Benny, who obviously started life in the New Adventures, which was obviously huge for the Seventh Doctor in the 90s, but then has a very rich Big Finish life as well. And then Big Finish, and you've got Mel from the TV as well, and Ace.
So do you think they'll be able to use Mel in future now, if she's in the series proper? Because I've always thought there was a ruling against if they're in the season, if they're in the current if they're in the current series,
yeah, I know what you mean.
They can't actually be in Big Finish. It makes me wonder if they'll be allowed to use her.
Well, I know that this has been in progress for several years, so they started this before they would have been told about anything about Bonnie coming back. Because Bonnie was very good at keeping secrets. She didn't let on in June at the Utopia thing at all about any of this. So, no one can really say anything until it's announced. So, yeah, I imagine you don't know really. Maybe they'll be able to use her again, maybe not.
I suppose if they know that they've pre-recorded a lot of stuff, I don't think Russell D. Davis is the type to go, no, you must junk all of it and waste your money. I don't think he
does. Yeah, and maybe it's...
He's the one who saved Big Finish in the first place when it first came back, wasn't he? It was like the BBC was sort of like wanted to withdraw all the other contracts, but he sort of like preserved Big Finishes. I suppose he's very pro-Big Finish.
Yeah, and there may be an agreement that she can appear with the Seventh Doctor.
Yeah,
but not anything post that.
But then they don't have the license to the next era till after that era is finished on the telly anyway. So technically, middle-aged Mel belongs in Shuti Gatwa era. So, it all gets a bit confusing.
And I loved her banter with Benny. I thought those two worked really well together. I love that little bit where they were together, like pretending not to be hearing things and stuff. I thought it was lovely. The end of the episode where they just like looked at this supervillain, they both go, who? I'd absolutely adore that. Was my favourite bit of the whole thing, actually.
Now, that was nice, because he's a terrible character. That nobody would remember. I think they're from a comic, actually, as well. That character's from a comic and an audio. So we're getting the deep cuts of Seventh Doctor here.
Yeah, that's nice though, as a celebration of his era to pull everything together and I suppose in terms of the timeline fluidity thing, there's so much contradictory.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I mean, even with Mel herself, they in the audios they brought this. It's hard to even explain this. They brought back Mel with a sort of season 25-ish Ace for some more adventures, and that never got resolved. So. My theory is this is going to resolve a lot of stuff at the end of it all. They're just going to streamline a lot of it to have one timeline maybe for everything.
Because she'd left Lynn, she'd become like a bit of a...
Yeah,
a bit criminal-ish herself.
A bit of a toughie, And then she
gone back to the Doctor and Ace again,
Some of those stories were odd because it was meant to be set after Hex for Ace, but a lot of the character development seemed to have gone. And some of the fans were a bit picky about this, but, Doctor Who fans... I think they're basically there's so much continuity confusion anyway, this will probably clear a lot of it up.
I mean, if you put all the Big Finish Seventh Doctor audios into some sort of order anyway, you've got novelization
it's not going to work
things as well, so they contradict each other as well. You've got loads of characters who are like introduced and then probably disappear again. because they are from the books and things, and their stories are concluded there. So
yeah, you've just got to enjoy it for what it is.
A lot of it is full of loose ends, really. So I doubt this will sort all of them out.
But I'm thinking because several of the characters in this have come back to the TV, it would be handy if they have a sort of definitive timeline for them, if you know what I mean. The amount of Aces we've had. I mean, even with Ace's 13th Doctor appearance, that contradicted the book that came out. Was it the same year as that? I can't even remember now.
Yeah, it's Sophie Eldred's book. Yeah,
yeah. It's just like there's loads of Aces, and that's fine.
Yeah, and this seems to acknowledge that in a way, doesn't it? That
you've got the multiversity thing. Yeah,
there's two Aces here. Because the universe being broken in this means that nobody can remember. So Mel doesn't really remember.
Yeah, she's very good about the Doctor.
There's going to be a lovely reset button at the end.
The big finish button to be pressed at the end.
But there's also, there's more than one Gallifrey here, isn't there, as well? Because there's the Gallifrey that the Doctor is being president of.
Yes.
Then there's also another Gallifrey.
The original Gallifrey appears
later
on.
That's from the books as well, though, isn't it? That's from the books as well, like multiple Gallifreys during
the... They've always destroyed Gallifrey, aren't they?
Yeah.
It gets destroyed every 10 years, probably.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's a tradition.
Because that's where Benny and Mel are doing the archaeology.
That's where they find the plot device.
The magic boxes, as I've written here. The magic box.
Yeah. But and then the other characters also go to a Gallifrey, don't they?
Do they?
They do. The Master and Co,
The Doctor's Gallifrey, the Master goes to, doesn't he?
Is that the Doctor's Gallifrey? I know the Doctor's watching...
The Dark Doctor, as in the bad... I don't know.
Yeah, that's the only Doctor so far.
Yeah, there's not a lot of Doctor in this. It's almost like an Eric Saywood story where the Doctor just turns up halfway through a little bit and people die.
So there's a question. When the evil Doctor and the evil Ace are having a conversation...
Yeah.
And Ace says, has the old rascal shown up?
Ah, right, yeah, that's a good point.
And the Doctor says, no, he knows better than to stay on Gallifrey when I'm here. And
that was Braxiatel.
That's a good idea.
I thought that's when they were talking about that.
They had mentioned Braxiatel in it.
Then they found he did, didn't
they? Yeah. At least Ace has got her Braxiatel continuity as well.
But then it could have been the Doctor as well, I suppose.
Because there's two Aces, I wondered if that meant there was another Doctor. Ace. Maybe another doctor.
I think it'll be the sixth Doctor will turn up, put it all right in the whole seventh Doctor era. It's just been a ghastly nightmare. That's perfect. Yes, I like that.
I wondered if in this version there was a Doctor who never left Gallifrey. Maybe that was because they weren't really...
Catweasel, yes. Well,
they weren't talking about Braxiatel, who I've not really that familiar with the character, other than I know that they're mentioned in The City of Death, and that's the origin of. But when they were referring to the character, they're saying that he was more like the stern maths teacher compared to the Doctor's fun field trip geography teacher. So he didn't seem like there's somebody they'd refer to as an old rascal.
It doesn't sound like it would be him, because they mentioned him, him in it in a different sense.
Yeah, and it's not the master, because the master's already...
He's already there, We'll find out next time.
That was a really intriguing reference that I only picked up on the second listen, because it's just a fleeting reference. So is there a good Doctor out in the universe somewhere?
Bound to be another Doctor if we've got two Aces.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
thinking.
The Doctor will have planned he would have overly planned everything.
Mm.
And it'll go wrong.
He'll turn up and give himself a lesson about how controlling everything's a really bad idea, and then it's time we'll go off and die.
He'll probably slap himself a few times, then go off and listen to a record and then get shot.
One will go off and get shot, and the other one will go into a TARDIS and remember the Curse of Fenric.
But now they all live forever or something. That was a bit confusing.
Yeah.
For marketing purposes.
I'm ignoring that one.
Greyhound leader to Trap 1. Emergency alert to all radar stations.
So, we do get, although it's very Doctor-like for the first two episodes, but then we do get more of the Doctor in his position as president. He's talking to the Krazi?
The Krazi lady. Yep.
Are they a Big Finish monster?
They, according to my notes, the Krazi, I'll read it out, they are from the Quantum Possibility Engine from 2018. They're a minor race. I don't even remember what they did because, there's so much but Doctor Who. But they are from the story where the plot device that they're looking for on Gallifrey is from. So it's linked to that story.
Right, so the quantum possibility, that's what they that's what they're seeking, isn't
it? And the annoying robot that Benny and Mel find is in that episode as well, which I'd forgotten all about until I read about it.
Yeah, I completely forgot that.
Ah, that's interesting then. Yeah, so I like that reveal that he's talking to her. And, you know, you don't know whether she's an advisor.
He's also talking to the Dark Citizens as well. And I did get a bit confused occasionally which one he was actually conversing with. So I suddenly thought, well, how come they're there if she's maybe locked away somewhere? Then I realised it was the Dark Citizens he was talking to at that point.
I think it's the same actor as well, isn't it?
Which didn't help.
I think.
Yeah, it was very similar. I think that's why I got to be a bit confused.
I think I were listening to the credits.
Yeah, I've got the credit. I've got it here in front of me. Yeah, someone that plays the Dark Citizen and the Karazi President and Miss Peters and Time Lord 2 and computer voices. So, this is the only time I do get a bit confused occasionally when that happens, when there's too many characters done by the same person.
And Gurrendon, the very annoying robot, sounded a bit similar to me as well. So I struggled with those two a bit as well. So I suddenly thought, well, why are they chasing Mel? And I realised that it was a different character.
So The Dark Citizens, they're from the previous Seventh Doctor box set, The Dark Universe.
Yeah, they're like a sort of dark multiverse type Gallifreyans, or probably Gallifreyans, but maybe not. I found that box set quite tiresome, to be honest.
Proto One's on a different path.
Yeah, something happened to them and they're stuck somewhere else, I think. Sorry, vague.
Good covers, though. I remember the covers were
made. Yeah, they look really nice.
So this is who the Doctor is using to control things in the universe. It's kind of reminded me a little bit of Death in Heaven. You know, the idea of Missy giving the Doctor this army to sort everything out, the Cybermen to be able to sort of... is that kind of thing being put in front of the Doctor as well? And whereas the 12th Doctor could reject that, say, well, that's not me. I'm just kind of an idiot who's just kind of going around trying to help people. For the Seventh Doctor, who does think on that kind of scale and is much more, like keep saying, Machiavellian, he doesn't resist that, or this version of him doesn't resist that, and he thinks, well, now I can put everything right, and he's wiped out the Daleks and the Thals.
Surprisingly easily, considering they had a massive time war a bit later, why couldn't they have just done it then?
I think the suggestion was he wiped them out at a very early stage, as was the plan in Genesis of the Daleks, because what he says is, you know, now on Skaro, the Thals are just thriving.
Just bored.
As artists.
They're just sitting around looking glamorous, yes.
They're doing makeup all the time.
Yeah. It wasn't wiping out the Daleks, who are spread out all over the universe and have conquered loads of planets. On those. The idea I got was they were just on Skaro.
Yeah.
And they've been blitzed, yeah.
The Skaro was basically Thals only, I've written down. Yeah, it's a Thal planet.
Yeah, there's a nice line where the Time Lord that he's keeping an eye on Skaro says they're too busy looking pretty or something like that.
Consistency.
But then you get that odd thing about there's the planet where there's the big religious war that's going to wipe everyone out, and the Doctor refuses to intervene.
Hmm. And just gets upset about the orchids at the end.
Yes, that was a very weird... That was the cliffhanger as well. Cryptic cliffhanger.
Some of them were very odd cliffhangers in this one. It was like, very strange. Yeah.
It's like those, you know, when they had the 45-minute episodes in Colin Baker and they'd have to cut them in half.
Cut them in half, yeah.
And you'd be like, is that the end? That's the cliffhanger. Yeah, a bit odd, but yeah.
So yeah, these are the kind of things, I guess, that will maybe come to make sense in the second half, what the relevance of that planet was. But it didn't seem...
And it's also ironic, as the Time Lord watching, the Time Lord thought the Doctor should intervene, and the Doctor didn't think he should intervene, which is a bit of a reversal of the usual characters, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is obviously not going to conclude with anything too much, because, I mean, they kill Vienna off. I mean, that's one of their box sets range. They're not going to do that, but I thought, well, you can more or less live with that. Then they killed off Lysander. You thought, well... She hasn't been in it for 10 years. I can do that. But when they kill off Benny, you think, oh, this has got to be.
Yeah.
This has got to. Yeah, this is going to have to reset at some point. So I do struggle to get invested. Yeah, if you're going to, I struggle to invest in something. If I know this is not going to actually mean anything by the end of it, you think, why bother?
Yeah, it's the worry, isn't it?
It's one of the biggest cliffhangers they could do, I suppose, though, for the midpoint of the whole story is to kill off Benny.
I mean, considering that Benny's in the next Eccleston box set, we kind of know she's not dead, so
Yeah, but it's time traveler. It could be he could be mating her before this.
So this is her final story, and they kill her off in episode 6 of a 12-part epic. Yes.
She's the Sarah Without much Kingdom. Fanfare, yeah. She's the Sarah Kingdom of the last day.
Well, she made it through to episode 12, didn't she? So.
No, that's true, yeah. But she came into it later, I suppose.
How true.
Greyhound, trap one. Is that you, Yates? Where are you?
I'm not that familiar with Hex or his wife. I don't think I've heard any stories with her, but I understand from the behind the scenes that she was a companion.
She was. She was from the black and white TARDIS arc, which was when they sort of like the Doctor was travelling with kind of two sets of companions at the same time, and then the TARDIS merged because he had like a black TARDIS and a white TARDIS and had different adventures. And then it all turned out to be Fenric at the end of the All Lived Happily Ever After.
Spoilers.
Right.
That was a really... Yeah, that was
we're
really
going to ruin it for
one.
Loads of folks,
yeah.
Aren't we?
But then again, you're not going to want to... You're not going to be buying this box set unless you know what the hell has gone on before, really.
True.
Because you'll just be like...
It's a very good one about nuclear war as well, which I remember.
Oh, Protect and Survive. That's really good.
Yeah, that was really good one. That stayed excellent. With me for a long time, that did.
I have heard that one. Yeah, that one is brilliant. Yeah,
that's the
only one. That one.
Yeah, that's the start of that whole run of really good classics. That whole, from that onwards to the end of the Fenric is some of the best Doctor Who audio ever.
But then again, it's some very confusing stuff. I mean, one of those, if you did miss one, you were scuppered, basically. But
yeah, and then people turn out to be someone from a long time ago's child that's now grown up, and then it links to some other Doctor Who stuff. Oh. It's I mean, that's like over 20 years
Hex,
worth.
Yeah, Hex turned out to be from the son of somebody who was in the Sixth Doctor audios.
Cassie from Project Twilight.
Yeah.
Then they got Evelyn Smythe in it.
Very into Nissan towards the end of them. Yeah. Evelyn's last story was bizarrely in a Seventh Doctor episode.
Yeah, that was odd.
Yeah, it got very confusing.
It all made sense, though, so that was good.
Yeah. I like things that reward repeat listening and loyalty and in the way that sort of the... Like, I really like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it feels like the fans of that are going through a similar thing to Doctor Who fans at the moment, where they worry that whether other people will be able to follow it. That sort of Doctor Who fan fear about casual viewers. Mm. In a way that, you know, how can you get in the mind of a casual viewer? Like, these are people who've been able to watch Doctor Who and not become obsessed by it. You can't get into the mind of someone like that. So no. I think Doctor Who fans... wondering what they'll make of it.
I visited a friend and their daughter made me watch something called Infinity War and I was completely baffled from beginning to end. So I think they might have a point on that.
That is really complicated. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The good thing about those Marvel films is they've kind of trained a lot of young people to be able to juggle all these plots and versions of people and all that kind of stuff. So that would help them with Doctor Who, definitely.
He said, you like fantasy, you will like this. And I thought, oh, I'm not sure I do.
Yeah, if you'd watched the preceding, you know, kind of
15,000 films prior to that, presumably.
The films prior to that, it really is very, very rewarding to see all these storylines pay off and the characters meet each other that you've seen individually. And I love that stuff. It's like multi-Doctor stories. You've seen them all separately. They come together. And this is as... Yeah. And this box set has an element of that as well because, like Mel and Benny meeting for the first time is characters that we've known for years and years and years. And then them getting to meet, I find really exciting. And, you know, the way that they hit it off.
But even then I had to think, have they met before? I can't remember. That's going to let you go back in your mind because there's so much
I don't think they ever have. It was really nice. Like you said, it's very much... I was worrying that it would be one of those shopping list releases where, you know, where they've tried to put a bit of everything in it. But overall, it definitely worked and it was rewarding. But
to be fair, we've just we listened to all those, like the anniversary special from Big Finish.
Oh, God.
To be fair, that was kind of shopping listy.
That was hard work, though, because there was...
Yeah, whereas this hasn't got that kind of hard work.
Yeah, that was pure nostalgia.
The initial episode went flew by. The first episode, I thought, God, is that finished already? That really sped by. So I thought that was excellent.
Yeah.
See, I'm still worried that a lot, like we were saying, that a lot of this will just become undone. Like a lot of those anniversary episodes that they did, where in the end it was like, well, that was nice, but what's actually happened, you know, at the end of it? Mm. Has anything changed? But I think this, they're going to have some kind of resolution that has a permanent change at the end of it.
Well, presumably a dead doctor, so that should do.
Someone's got to push him off the edge.
the doctor on his way to
go and pick up some, here, just pick up the master.
Go pick up some remains off the Daleks, as you would.
Yeah.
A bit of a weird invitation.
I wonder if the master heel will start getting sneaky or something.
Aww. Yeah.
Man, that doesn't really work, because that should be Mountain England, really, isn't it? Oh, I don't know.
But I think actually, weirdly, from what I understand of what Big Finish have done with the master, is that the crispy master is not necessarily always the same crispy version of the master. He could be from a later master that's gone crispy for a different reason or something like that.
Crispy master took over Anthony Endley, then in Dust Breeding.
Yes.
Anthony Endley got blown away and just left him crispy.
Exactly. So the crispy master isn't always the Keeper of Trark and Deadly Assassin master. He could be a later one that's gone crispy.
So sometimes it's crispy before Trark, and
yes,
sometimes it's
pre-crispy and post-crispy.
After. Yeah.
Which is handy. Rice crispy.
Right. I don't think I fully appreciated that.
You don't need to, honestly. It's such a saga, all of this stuff. but does it work for you then, Mark, as someone who hasn't listened to everything, does it work for you? Because I worry about if you were like a new listener listening to this that didn't know anything about those stories. But
I know bits and pieces. I have heard some Doctor and Hex stories, like that Protect and Survive. Mm. I have heard that one. I thought that was brilliant. But I think, you know, it's like you're saying about, you know, kind of people worrying about casual viewers or, you know, is there too much continuity in the 60th anniversary and things. I think they give you enough information that you can, you know, discern what you need to know. You know, that Hex and his wife used to travel with the Doctor.
Yeah.
Now they don't. They've settled on Earth. So the Broken Universe thing has meant that they've forgotten all that. But yeah, that's all that you need to know, really. I suppose like Mel in the new series, you just need to know she's traveled with the Doctor. That's probably as much information as you need about her. It's not.
That's true, actually. I watch reaction videos sometimes, and it's like, I'm intrigued to know what people just discovering for the first time think. And they all sort of go, oh, she must have known the Doctor. Like Mel appears and they all go, oh, she must have known the Doctor from years ago.
Yeah.
That's kind of all they need to know.
You just give all the information's there and, you know.
And with Mel, she hasn't even got an origin anyway. She's the perfect example, because she's got multiple origins and endings anyway. So she said in the TV show that she was an orphan. That's the only thing I think she mentioned recently in the recent episode. But yeah, that's the point. In this episode, Mel mentions about being middle-aged in episode 4. So I assume this is an older version of her, but it wasn't very clear. I found that confusing. It was like a joke about being middle-aged.
Yeah, shit, I'll spend my middle age like going through these tunnels or something.
I'm probably overthinking it like I do.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I think you're right that this would all have been written and recorded a long time before we knew that she was coming back. Yeah, so because it all contradicts, I suppose, all the Big Finish of her coming back to travel with Ace contradicts on the TV show that we knew that once Sabalom Glitz died and she was with him into his old age.
Yeah, nothing adds up, but you have to just enjoy it.
And Mel's introduced in a book, and the Big Finish completely contradicted.
Yeah, which I finally read last year. It's actually quite a good book. I finally got around to reading it. Yeah.
That's a Gary Russell one, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And that's part of a big story arc.
It's a bit racy at times. Now, that was quite fun.
Yeah, I read that trilogy a few years ago. Yeah, it was quite interesting.
There's a trilogy of it. Oh, Jesus. I've only read
one. Yeah, the characters come back.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that becomes a story arc as well.
Yeah.
Everything becomes an arc. Yeah. I'll have to check that out one day when I retire, when I have time.
So the stuff on Earth with Hex and his wife is set in the 2040s, which I thought was quite
interesting. Because he's from like 2021.
He's from the future then.
He's from the futuristic time. And now it's, they said in it they're in the 2040s because the child's meant to be about 17 or something, isn't she? Something like that. Yeah, so that fits for about 2040-ish.
Right, I didn't get that. That was because he was written as from the future.
Yeah, there was slack because the hospital was sort of like had talking doors and things, didn't it? At the time and stuff like that.
It all came true.
Because they talk about, because Ace, who's the president of Earth in this sort of quite dystopian future, she says, "Oh well, you know, we should have spaceships and things like that." And I thought, well, that's a bit weird because it's only 20 years from now. We're unlikely to be spacefaring, but that's like Doctor Who continuity where.
Yeah,
I suppose
we had a British space program and all that kind
of
thing.
Yeah,
But then again, the politics of their time, we'd be 20 years ahead, there's actually got a president of Earth. Mm. And you can't, at the moment, we're not quite there yet, are we, being that unified? Even remotely.
So. But there was a suggestion that there was some crisis that led to that, wasn't there? Some kind of emergency.
I mean, obviously, the environment's not working because they've got the Ross Norwich and things like that.
That was quite a funny line.
Like the holding back the book. But I'm also, these characters are meant to be the heroes, and they're very keen on keeping people out and having borders and border patrols and stuff.
I did get a bit of Brexitiness.
Aliens? Are they keeping out foreigners? I'm not quite sure which. But then if you've got a president of Earth, would you have foreigners?
I think it's about aliens, isn't it?
It's a satire again, I think, as well, because you've got to get a bit of your politics into it.
Some of the stuff they say, that sounds a bit dubious. And they're meant to be our heroes, which again, it makes me wonder whether the evil Doctor and evil Ace are the real heroes.
No, I don't.
Dictatorship to save the world, that's what we need. Yes, definitely.
I kind of thought that there was something going on where they were good. But then I think when Ace tried to make Hex's daughter choose...
Yeah, that was the key moment, wasn't it?
That was the twist where she sounded so reasonable and she was giving her milkshakes and saying, oh, yeah, we just want to,
and changing her perception as well. She can change the way everybody thinks, which is a bit un-Ace, right, really?
That's... That was, like you say, that's the turning point. That's the point when you realise that character.
Was her wearing sunglasses to be like the book covers? Because they said that they never seen her eyes. She was always wearing sunglasses. And the Ace in the new Ace in the book, she was always wearing sunglasses.
The PVC catsuit Ace.
So I wonder if this is going to be like the the book versions versus the audio versions.
Or maybe it's implied that she's got some kind of hypnosis thing going on. Maybe, because she keeps kind of getting people to do things. I don't know. It could be a bit of that, maybe. A bit mastery.
Nobody's ever seen her without the sunglasses on, but then when she takes them off, it's almost like it's out. Then Hex kind of recognizes her a little bit.
Mm. It's a perception thing, maybe?
She has to then use a machine, though, to give him some of his memories back of his early adventures with the Doctor and Ace.
Yeah, I like how she only gave him his memories back up until when it all went a bit rubbish.
Right.
At a certain point in the story, after Hex gets shot and almost dies the first time, where they should have probably killed the character off, and then they brought him back in this terrible mini-series type saga that wasn't very good. He didn't get to remember that bit, which I thought was quite amusing.
Yeah, very meta. Yeah.
I like the idea, though. So the stuff where Ace trained with the Time Lords, which I think was Andrew Cartmell's plan for how she would exit, where did that happen?
They've done a bit of that. They've done sort of like season 27 stuff-ish. Yeah. And he's travelled with Rain a bit, and she went off to the academy. It was never sort of like taken beyond.
They did it in what's it called? One of the Gallifrey series, they had one with Ace and Brexitel on the cover. And Lala Ward Romana and maybe Leela. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. So there was a bit of that in that. So we had a few stories with Gallifrey Ace. But again, it's just another Ace that contradicts the other ones. And they're always kind of self-aware about this a bit as well. There are many Aces.
That wasn't a New Adventures thing, that thing.
The Lost Season, and then they did another box set, which sort of... had the Master in, and they had flying baby heads, and that was Rain. But also, it was a message from Gallifrey, and Ace was there then. It was a message from Ace from Gallifrey warning him about something.
Yeah. It was in the same continuity as the season 27 ones,
Because when you said about her wearing the shades, that is the book New covers, Adventures Ace. Yeah. And then that, when she was fought in the Dalek Wars, became that very hardened kind of warrior type Ace, and whether that was, a nod to that New Adventures thing.
It might be.
Greyhound leader, trap one, over.
Trap one, we reach Greyhound leader, over. So, I think we've talked about the sort of dirty half dozen. We've got, the guy that's played by Stuart Milligan, guy that played Nixon, wasn't it, in the Impossible Astronaut. That, he's a big Finnish character.
Garandol.
He is, yeah.
I've written down
this. Starlight Robbery, Jenny box sets, black and white.
Oh, God, the Jenny box, that's what it was. Yeah, the irritating frog alien I wrote down for that, because I always found it a bit broad.
You did Starlight Robbery with McCoy, and then went into the Jenny box sets, I think.
Right.
I don't think I know. I looked it up this morning, because I don't know why I said that. So,
I was not familiar with his character either. But yeah, it was a bit of kind of comic relief, I suppose, wasn't he? In the
He's a wheeler dealer. He's like a space Alan Sugar.
Right.
But evil.
I liked that some of the stuff between the Master and Kane was quite good, wasn't it? When Kane sort of saying, I'll reach into your chest and freeze your heart. And the Master's like, well, are you sure?
Kane's sort of coming over as like an anti-hero, really, isn't he? He's like the far more reasonable of all of them. He's actually the most sane of them, bizarrely. Yeah. And Mother's interesting because I think she was in a third Doctor box set.
Yeah, she was the Master's companion.
Where they obviously couldn't get the Master because, well, him being dead, Delgado being dead. So they had like somebody who travelled with him and was acting like him, really. You kind of think it's going to be the Master, and then this Mother character tends to be dominant. But I don't think she's done anything with the Seventh Doctor.
Right.
No, I don't think she has. She's done lots of Big Finish, the actress has, because she's in quite a lot of things that they do. But that character's only been in a couple of things.
A lot of Big Finish is sort of like Jobs for Mates, isn't it? Because you get lots of recurring cast. And a lot of characters you think, they'd say in the extras at the end, oh yeah, we had to bring them back. You think, well, you didn't have to bring them back. You wanted to bring them back. So it's like, you've obviously got on and they're obviously reliable and like fun to be with. So that's why you brought them back.
That's interesting that that's not a Seventh Doctor villain then, because I assumed that it...
Maybe it's a replacement for somebody that couldn't do it, maybe. Yeah, it's a bit of a weird choice.
Especially when you've already got the actual Master there.
Yeah.
Why do you need the Master? Probably less her eyes are going to become important later because she's got like these like Geordie LaForge things in. So
there's some talk about her being able to see the spectrums, isn't it?
There's got to be a reason for her to be there. Yeah.
The portal thing at the end. Yeah.
But so far, apart from going to opening a door and stuff, they've not really used their talents for much other than posturing, have they?
And bitching with each other, which is always entertaining.
Oh, that's the best episode with the bitching at each other. Yeah, I have to say,
bitchy villains is always fun.
Five, where villains weren't bitching, was the most. I didn't like that one very much. I found that one a bit slow, where they were just like Sontarans killing people. Whereas villains bitching was like very entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Cyborg Ogrons always interesting.
I pictured them as like Robo Men at first because it described crowns that have been grafted on. So I'm
torturing them all the time.
Yeah,
but there's no Daleks, is there? So that was what I. Yeah, I was trying to kind of reconcile that.
Well, it depends when they were destroyed, whether the technology remained or not. Because, I mean, a lot of these characters were like thieving and stealing stuff, aren't they? So maybe they stole Dalek technology before they disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit desperate, isn't it? Probably not.
But again, the Ogrons aren't really a Seventh Doctor kind of monster, are they? I know they're in... Shakedown, the Terence Dix novelization. I want to say it's like a private eye who's an Ogre.
Can't remember at all.
It's kind of stretching things a bit there.
There's some Terrans are in that one.
I can't remember.
I've still got the video.
Ogrons appear every now and then, but not that much.
Yeah, I just feel like there was. Maybe...
I think they struggle to do Ogrons now because they are sort of vaguely racist, aren't they? Sort of like dark skinned lumbering heavies. It's like,
They had a weird, strange, clever one in one of those Eighth Doctor Time Wars a while ago, but I can't really recall any more detail.
Right. Sorry. There's one that was sort of like part
with glasses
part
or something.
Part Ogre.
So to wrap things up a bit, I guess what predictions do we have?
Reset button. Is it?
Reset button. Yeah.
The Doctor teach himself a lesson.
Yeah.
Oh, I've lived too long. I've done terrible things. I'm going to go and rescue the Master and get shot.
Definitely.
After learning my lesson, I shall die peace and happy and with a tube in my heart.
Yeah, I mean,
in agony. My next companion will kill me on a table.
So you're predicting everything that happens. No, my prediction was basically, like I said before, that I'm assuming that they're going to have like definitive statuses for these characters because you've got half of these people, they've brought them back. It's lovely to see them, but they don't remember their own stories. So I'm assuming they're going to have to all remember everything so they can all meet properly for the fan service that we require. And then have a definitive version of Mel, a definitive Ace at the end of it, so that there's a purpose to it all. But yeah, there's definitely a reset button somewhere because, you know, the Daleks are going to come back. Everything will be reverted back to normal. The Doctor will probably learn a valuable lesson.
And there'll be a speech. He'll bad a big speech at the end. Mm-hmm.
There'll be a nice speech with some rolling of his R's, no doubt, as well. I've written down, randomly on my notes, I've written down, is it character housekeeping, which just basically means tidying up all of their stuff? Because to be honest, they've left so many things in their own ranges unresolved. It would be a good time for them to just kind of, you know, sort it all out in the nicest possible way.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I think I wasn't aware of how much of that was.
Because they're going to run out of time to do those stories because nobody's getting any younger. You know, you might as well sort of tidy up some of these loose ends that they've got. It'd be nice to do it. And then also, we've got some of the, in box two, we've got some of the new adventures characters that we haven't had yet as well. So they've got to get involved somehow as well. Got Chris and Roz are in it.
Yeah, of course.
Are they? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they're in box two. And hopefully Benny will still not be dead for a while so she can meet them. And they must have met Ace in those. They were later on, but didn't Ace keep coming back every now and then in those books?
She did. She kept popping up.
She had a wedding. I remember that with the special cover.
Oh, Benny's wedding.
It was a long time ago. Oh, yeah, Benny's wedding, not Ace's wedding. Sorry. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
Happy endings, isn't it? Yeah, I remember sending off for the poster.
Yeah, I've still got that. I've still got that book. Yeah.
Okay. Have you still got the poster?
Somewhere, I think, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was quite cool.
But yeah, as it's a celebration of the Seventh Doctor, you know, they've got to have to tidy some of the pieces, I think. That would be nice. And have actual reunions of the characters as their versions that we know.
Well, that's what I think, because the Doctor himself has only interacted really with Ace and a little bit with Hex.
Because he was probably not actually in the studio.
Remotely, But that does, I think, still do that now, can't they?
Yeah, but I often find that it sounds like he's just reading it for the first time occasionally. So I do hope he gets more, you know, acting interaction, you know, proper acting with the characters. Because, you know, it can work fine on remote. Most of the time, you don't even notice it.
Yeah, that's it. But I think they've probably perfected that during the pandemic.
Yeah, those first few releases were, you know, they were strange, weren't they? Some of the sound levels on some of it. But yeah, they got very good at that very quickly. It was great.
Being slightly deaf, it didn't bother me at all, any of that. I rose across a bit with this. BBV did this audio called Punchline.
Oh, that's great, like, that is. Yeah,
yeah, and it kind of implies that the Doctor, like the Seventh Doctor, is kind of not real and fictional anyway. So
yeah.
I always have to have a list, and I always have to have everything in order. And Punchline is always at the end, because it kind of, that explains everything by the fact that the Doctor's not actually real.
Right.
So even I was kind of deciding whether this should be at the end of the list or whether Punchline should still be at the end of the list. I mean, yet to be decided.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that's what I want to see is the Doctor interacting more, which I'm sure we'll get in the second half, because he's interacting with the, like you say, with the Krazi lady. And that's another thing where it starts off quite kind of genial and benign, but then it says, well, you know, I've wiped out your entire species and I've just kept you as a little example, as a little kind of specimen in a zoo.
Well, that's cruel, but zoo, yes.
Yeah, that's it, because he said it's not a prison, it's more like a zoo, isn't it, or something like that.
He referred to it as a zoo with pairs of races he's destroyed.
But he's only really unpleasant to her when she's sort of threatening to him, so it's almost as if he has to have one-upmanship every time.
He's got to have someone to talk to as well, because otherwise what are we going to listen to as listeners? He's got to have that communication with somebody.
Yeah, because he's got other Time Lords who are just sort of keeping an eye on different areas. And that's where I wasn't sure whether this is the same Gallifrey that's been infiltrated by Rebel Ace and her Merry Men or a different Gallifrey. Because Ace talks about, well, because of the sort of fractured universe, that the Time Lords are all really spread out and they're trying to patch things up. But that seems at odds with the Gallifrey that the Doctor is reigning over, where people are just sort of monitoring things and reporting back to him. They're not desperately out there trying to kind of plaster the
Baron
over the cracks.
Gallifrey, where Mel and Benny are as well.
The one where they are.
That's definitely the original Gallifrey. They said that was the old Gallifrey where Mel and Benny are. But yeah, the other one, there may well be three Gallifreys then.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't quite clear about, even after three.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Three listens, because there's a point where the Doctor is watching Ace and the Master and Kane and everybody, because you kind of, you know, you do that thing with the sound where he's clearly watching them on a screen or whatever, and he chuckles. So he's aware of that. And when he says to his ace, oh, you don't need to worry about the other ace, it's because he knows that she's now on a Gallifrey and trying to get through this kind of portal thing, isn't it? Which I guess is going to take him to his universe, maybe.
Maybe there'll be a whole other universe. Oh, yeah, that's a portal to the Dark Citizens universe. I was just checking my notes. Yeah.
Ah, right. Oh, I've missed that.
Then. Yeah, sorry. It was so that's the episode I had to listen to twice because there's so much information. Yeah.
Yeah. Dodgy Dimension Dark Citizens, I've written.
But I quite like that about it, that I've been able to listen. And it wasn't like the third time. I wasn't kind of thinking, oh, I'm bored. I've know all this. You know, I've listened to it maybe over a week and a half, three times. Every time, definitely picking up more stuff. It's kind of value for money wise.
Starts really well, yeah. Yeah. I say episode 5 I found a bit tedious, but then it perks up again towards the end of episode 6. But
yeah. And I have to listen to it again in the summer when the second part comes out. You know, I'm just going to launch into the episode 6 to 12 without kind of a refresher on this one as well. So I think in terms of re-listenability, it's well worth the cover price.
Greyhound to trap one. Greyhound to trap one. How do you read me? Over.
They're all going to get their memories back by about a couple of episodes into the next one, I hope. Because they've all got such a rich history with each other. You need to use that. It would be crazy to have all these amnesiac people walking around, not remembering.
Let's put it at the end, the Seventh Doctor proving to be more sinister than the War Doctor. Yeah. He's done more horrible stuff in this than the Water Doctor did in like 15 box sets.
that is our common complaint about the War Doctor box sets, isn't it?
He's not that bad. No. He's always quite all right. Yeah. Oh, one more note I wrote down. Another quotey bit. When Ace is manipulating Cassie to choose which parent to be punished, and she basically says, come on, Cassie, you want to change the world, don't you? Which felt a bit like the end of Survival's dialogue bit that they put on as they walked off saying they had work to be done. But I may be overthinking that, as Doctor Who fans
that's
often
a good
do.
Point.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I like the way that they're kind of what I said before, the Doctor and Ace, the bad versions, aren't moustache-twirling obvious villains. They are coming across as convincing, and it's only these
little bits of behaviour. I like how the last bit of the cliffhanger was, in fact, the Doctor saying things are going to get much, much worse. Maybe he'll appear even less in the rest of it. I mean, I assume he's going to have a bigger. In all seriousness, I assume he's going to have a bigger role because it is a Seventh Doctor thing, and a lot of this was setting up the big story. I mean, my only real criticism of it was that I enjoyed it as I was listening to it, but then once it finished, I thought, well, they did take a long time to get to this point. It's a whole box, but it was enjoyable while listening to it. So a lot of fans, I was looking on. Gallifrey Base, Outpost Gallifrey, whatever it's called. And a lot of people were a bit, you know, complaining about how long it took to get to that point. But, you know, you can see their point as well. But I would recommend it, definitely.
Yeah, I would. I feel like the character work's very good. The world building of 2040 and the, you know, the broken universe and Gallifrey under the Doctor and all that kind of stuff is really, really richly done. I think a lot of the sort of Twitter kind of instant reactions were, you know, sort of people listening to it once. And kind of thinking I couldn't follow it. Don't really know what it was about.
We listened to it twice and do our podcasting.
I think it's very much one you really have to concentrate on. You really have to sort of try and follow. But I'd say I like the fact that it rewards multiple listens.
And he did answer questions the second time. I remember thinking, well, how did they meet then? If how did Hex and Sally meet then? If then actually there's a line that Ace says, well, how did you two meet then? They go, on holiday. Yeah, so things were actually answered, yeah.
Yeah, they did cover all of the plot holes, yeah.
I shall definitely be buying the conclusions.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Oh, great.
Well, I've ordered it as a bundle, so yeah.
Well, hopefully we can all reconvene then in the summer and...
I'll put a note in the diary. Yeah.
So keep June free.
Oh, God, there's so much going on in June. Nah, it's fine.
We can get together in July, maybe.
Yeah. It's cool. I'll definitely be buying it and listening to it.
Great. Well, thank you very much both for listening to this and taking the time to discuss it. Hopefully, you know, for our listeners, maybe we've made things a little bit clearer and Not confused them even more, and reminded them who some of the characters are, or, you know, maybe characters they hadn't heard before, and I kind of maybe painted a bit more of the picture and put a bit more background in. Dan, thank you for joining for your first full Trap One.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great to have you. If you'd like to let our listeners know where else they can find you on the internet.
On Twitter, never X. You're right, you know. I am at @D_Hollingsworth. On Instagram, I am known as Another Dan Hollingsworth. That's all one word, because there were loads of them when I tried to join it. And on Blue Sky, which is lovely but a little bit quiet, I am at dhollingsworth.bsky.social, which is the same logical layout of name that everyone has on there. So that's pretty straightforward if you know what Blue Sky is like.
And Keith, you're an old Trap One hand, but any new listeners?
I am no longer on Twitter because I just couldn't bear it anymore. So I am on Threads as Crass as Wild, for reasons too complicated to go into. And I am a Mastodon under my actual name of Keith Say. And I know all the jokes.
You can follow the podcast at @Trap1_ on Twitter and just Trap1.bsky.social on Blue Sky.
And you're on Threads and you're on Mastodon.
Are you? My God, you're busy.
Yeah, I'm not on there personally, just trying to spread the word about the podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening at home. Join us next time, where another panel will be discussing something else from the world of Doctor Who. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.